Chapter 27 1 Music began to be heard in the conference room. It was slow, dignified music, ponderous, impressive. The emissaries looked about with some interest, wondering what was going to happen. So far, this had been a deadly dull conference on an apparently deadly dull planet that didn't even have any nightlife or dancing or singing females to serve up. The conference had begun right away, as though there was something urgent or important to take up. Not even a customary round of hot spots to get acquainted. So far, no one had even offered any bribes. Instead, just some boring minor squabble that concerned combatants of just this one universe, and just a sector of it at that. Nice music, fit for regal functions, much less a conference. A huge man entered the door. He was about 6.5 feet tall, stripped to the waist, wearing a scarlet sash, with yellow skin, shaved head. It was one of the Mongols from among the Chinese. That in itself would not have been very interesting, but his muscles were huge and swollen with the effort of carrying something on his head that would seem to be very heavy indeed. But from all they could see, he was carrying nothing. There were his arms and gripping hands. There were his bulging back muscles and biceps. Although he was walking in cadence with the music, there was even a slightly perceptible tremor in his legs, but they could see nothing being carried. The man went up to the platform and with great care set the nothing down. They even heard a bump. It was a glassine electronics table used by Cyclos for small electronic work that required light from every angle. It had been sawed down and sprayed with lens spray that passed light 100%, and so nothing reflected. He arranged the nothing with great care. There was a bit of a flurry in the audience as emissaries craned about and peered, amused and interested. The communicator, acting as host, he had a stripped-down mind radio in his ear, said,
"You have the solemn promise of this planet, at the risk of heavy indemnity, that no lethal, destructive, or harmful object will be entered into this conference room."
Several emissaries laughed. They were quite cheerful. A good joke to put nothing on the platform and then say it was harmless. It quite took their fancy. But something else was happening now. The huge Mongol had withdrawn. To the stately music, two beautifully gowned Chinese boys, faces impassive, came down the aisle. Each was carrying a gorgeous red satin pillow with gold tassels, and on each pillow was a huge book. Solemnly, first one, then the other, approached the host. He took each book from its pillow and laid it upon the heretofore invisible table, spine titles toward the audience. So there was something on the platform. An invisible table. New interest. Those with better eyes could read the titles on the spines up there. One was a dictionary of the Cyclo language. The other was Intergalactic Laws by Treaties of Governing Nations. But Lord Schleim, with his weak tallnap eyes, was not even trying to read any book titles. He was tense and crouching back. Theatrics. They were pulling theatrics on him. Ah, well. He would corner whoever this was and bite him to death with wit fangs. Sst! On theatrics. They would change nothing. The two boys withdrew in a stately fashion, carrying away their now empty pillows. The music suddenly stopped. There was a roll of drums.
"Masters of all planets, lords of the great and powerful realms of 16 galaxies, may I now introduce to your august presence Lord Johnny, he who embodies the spirit of Earth."
A trumpet fanfare cut through and rose above the drums. The clear, piercing notes rose into the air. Johnny came walking down the aisle. He was walking slowly, heavily, commanding, as though he weighed 1,000 pounds. He was dressed in black and silver, and he carried a silver wand. But it wasn't silver. It looked so, but when the light caught it, on the slightest movement, it flashed with blindingly bright rainbow colors. He came to the platform, stepped up, moved behind the table, and turned. At that instant, a mind spotlight placed just above the door flamed on. He stood there in black and silver, and yet a blaze of living color. He did not speak. feet apart, not blocked from their view by the table, he held the silver wand between his two hands and simply looked at them with a stern and even disdainful expression. Dominant. This was impressive enough to the emissaries. Even though they were used to pomp and tended to discount it, they would have been respectful of this display. But there was something else. The beast on the helmet. It looked alive. The trick of the light, the play of the silver metal that flashed, the glowing red coals of eyes. Whatever it was, it looked alive. Was he wearing a live, winged beast on his helmet? Lord Schleim would have none of it. Unfortunately, there had been a slight slip which played directly into his hands. When one word meant several things in Cyclo, it required a slight change of inflection or tone to make it have the different meaning. The word spirit in Cyclo could also mean mind, angel, or devil. And although the communicator had used the right inflection for spirit, Lord Schleim chose to accept a different inflection. The Tallnep sprang up as though striking from cover.
"Lords and august emissaries," he said with an acid hiss, "I challenge the right of this devil to speak. We have seen no credentials. We..."
"Sir," said Johnny, "I could not quite hear you. What did you say?" Lord Schleim whirled on him. He began savagely,
"I said..."
"Ah, yes, yes, yes," said Johnny, waving his wand. "I beg your pardon, your lordship. It was merely your uncouth Tallnep accent, quite provincial. Can you understand him, my lords?" They laughed. It was true that Schleim had a bit of an accent, due probably to his fangs and having to hiss. Tallneps were really quite rural. They had only one planet, and that was quite distant from the center of things.
"You devil,"
hissed Schleim. Said Johnny. "No violence in such a meeting. I am quite certain I, nor the truly worthy emissaries in this gathering, desire your ejection from it." Then, before Schleim could retaliate, something else happened. The wand, which had been tapping Johnny's palms, suddenly pointed in the direction of Schleim's feet. It had a small beam of light set in the end of it, and it flashed on. It was a light used to show dust in a mine shaft, and it made a very thin white pencil of light, like a pointer. Johnny looked a bit incredulous. Then he turned his head clear off to the side as though to hide a laugh. The light switched off. Schleim looked down. He had to stretch, for he had a bit of a paunch. What had this devil seen? Then Lord Schleim saw them. His boots. Instead of wearing his proper scaled, glittering green boots, he was wearing old, rough blue boots. Dirty blue boots. His valet. In the rush of getting him off, his clumsy, damned valet had put the wrong boots on him. Oh, when he got home. When he got home, he would have the oaf punctured. Worse, dragged through the streets and bitten to death by small children. But Johnny was addressing the emissaries. "I must apologize to you, my lords. I pray you to overlook my discourtesy in arriving late. But I am sure you will understand when I tell you that I was looking for a point of law." He looked at them in a kindly and deferential fashion, laid down the wand on the invisible table, and tapped the top of the law book. The manners and phrases of the old Chinko instruction discs were coming in handy now. At first, when he entered, he had felt stiff and unnatural, artificial and affected. But suddenly, it felt as though he had been doing this sort of thing all his life. "No one," he continued, "could possibly expect such noble and such highly titled and credentialed lords to experience an uncomfortable trip, nor to convene upon such a lowly and undeserving planet for the petty purpose of adjudicating the minor differences of some back-planet squabble." The delegates sat up. This was more like it. This is what they had been thinking all the time. Hear, hear. Sir Robert was thunderstruck. What was this lad up to? The war not important? Their strong points caving in, their friends dying, and he could say it wasn't important? He looked at the two small gray men. They were both sitting there, smiling, a bit vacant, but smiling. They hadn't been smiling before, and Sir Robert knew for a fact that Johnny hadn't talked with them, so they knew no more than he. But he had to restrain himself from jumping up to cry out that this was an important war. One point. These emissaries in their jewels and flashing clothes, strange faces and feelers, were all bobbing their heads and settling down for a real conference. "No," continued Johnny, "it would be an insult to the mighty states you represent to call you here on something as trivial as repelling pirates." Lord Slime started to slither up out of his chair. He was about to shout this devil down and force him to mend his language when he saw those eyes looking again at his boots. But it wasn't really the glance at the boots that stopped Lord Slime. He recognized, with diplomatic shrewdness, that this devil could fall into a trap of his own digging. It was a very simple matter to prove that the attacking Tolnep ships were fully commissioned legal ships and officers of the Tolnep Navy. So let the devil plow on for now. He'd fang him shortly. Ha! The fellow was no real opponent after all. "Such regal representatives of kings and governments," continued Johnny, "should, and if I am wrong, please correct me, convene on real points of treaties and intergalactic law. And on these their expertise cannot be seriously challenged or questioned." "Hear, hear. True. Naturally. You have a point. Pray continue." The emissaries, all except for the combatants, were sitting up, interested. And all combatant representatives began to look uneasy. All except Lord Slime, who was beginning to feel confident. This devil was going to dig a hole for himself. There was one trouble here for Lord Slime. Each time that devil moved, it made lights flash off his buttons, and Tallnaps had to wear filters to convert to ordinary visible spectrum. So every flash of a button overwhelmed the power of the filter, and he was getting a headache. He wished he could make them turn off that spotlight they had on this creature. Johnny was sweeping on. "The definition of the category of pirate, as opposed to the definition of military force, is a critical question. I am sure that from time to time, even in the best organized, paid, and regulated military forces, elements of navies or even merchant ships have mutinied, or gone astray, or been misled, and have turned pirate, defying the benign and responsible authority of their own governments." "Oh, yes, many instances. Just last month, in these troubled times, a squadron of spaceships had mutinied at Oxentab. Lots of them in history. An old point," the emissaries agreed. "Lot of stories written about it. Go on." "So," continued Johnny, "to protect legitimate authority, such as that which you represent, pleased faces except for the combatants, and to really be able to cope with piracy when it occurs, the definition must be clarified. And this can only be done by an august body such as yours in the form of a formal treaty." "Good idea. Correct. Right." Very glum combatants, except Slime, who was certain now this devil would shortly be sent down in flames. Johnny opened the Cyclo dictionary to a marked place. "We know that the Cyclo language is a composite of many tongues, even your own individual languages, and was not in fact a language generated solely by the Cyclos. It is a universal tongue because it was taken from many universes, which is the only reason we so generally speak it." That was true. Real scholarship. The Cyclos picked up everything from others, including language. Shouldn't even be called Cyclo. The emissaries buzzed about it. "This dictionary," said Johnny, "is the standard recognized work, is it not?" He held it up. "Yes," they nodded. Johnny laid the book down and read from it. "It states, pirate, one who preys upon commerce or communities or planets in a vessel or spaceship or group of ships not under the regulation of a national or planetary government. Also, any commander or crew member of such a ship." Right, right. That was a pirate. But Lord Slime was feeling very smug. He felt he really had this devil now. He could see exactly which way he was trying to go. It would be child's play to fang these arguments to pieces and then proceed with the surrender talks. What a letdown the devil was going to get. Every Tolmep ship was under the direct orders of the Tolmep government, totally legal. Johnny had turned to the book on intergalactic law. However, according to treaties, of which intergalactic law is composed, we have a different definition.
With your permission, I will read it. Article 234,352,678. Based on the treaties of Cyclo versus Hoven, signed at Blanc, Cyclo versus Kamchad, signed at Cyclo, a pirate shall hereinafter be defined as one who feloniously steals or mines minerals.
Johnny tapped the book and laughed lightly. I guess we know who and how and why that misdefinition occurred. They laughed. Cyclo was not very well liked, and a Cyclo would pass anything to protect Cyclo interests.
Therefore, said Johnny, this august body, I feel, should define pirate and piracy among systems and planets, and, after due deliberation, envisage the execution of treaties to forbid it.
Sir Robert groaned. The lad was proposing days of wrangling over stale things like treaties when the planet was being torn to bits with a flat-out assault, undoubtedly egged on by this Tolmep through his hidden radio. But his groans were drowned in the general assent. Johnny had now drawn back from the books. He took up the wand. He tapped it in his palm.
I feel, in my humble opinion,
he certainly didn't look humble, that we must work upon this now in order that we should know whether the Tolmep fleet officers and crewmen are to be slowly vaporized individually as pirates or simply shot as military men when court-martialed. Lord Schleim slithered up with a scream.
Stop!
He glared around at the other combatants. They just sat behind him. They were saying nothing. They simply looked stunned. Then he realized that the devil had said Tolmep. He had not said combined forces. Venom splattered as Lord Schleim hissed his protest. The devil had gone too far. In a moment, Lord Schleim would tear down his house, but just now there was another point.
You are selecting out the honorable Tolmep forces for your venomous insinuations, said Schleim ravingly. This is a clear case of prejudice and has to be dismissed as such by this body. There are other combatants. I demand these statements to be stricken from our recorders as biased, slanted, and an intentional insult to the Tolmep planetary forces.
Johnny calmly smiled at him and looked at the Tolmep boots and back up to the fanged face. Bombastic conduct will right no wrongs here. Your conduct insults these lords. Behave yourself.
I demand a reply,
screamed Schleim.
Johnny sighed tolerantly. Very well, you shall have it. It is my opinion that the Hovens, Bolbods, Drawkins, Jambit Chow, and Hockner forces were simply coerced, probably with false statements, into cooperating with the Tolmeps. Since by your own testimony your ships vastly outnumber theirs, and since your own senior officer, as you state, commanded the so-called combined force, and when killed was succeeded by another Tolmep, who is now their senior officer, it seems very evident they were forced to cooperate in this attack by the superior firepower of the Tolmep fleet. So we cannot hold these other races or forces guilty, and we are not charging them. They are only victims, and cannot be regarded, in my opinion, in any other way when we apply the word pirate on a clarified definition.
Now was the time. Lord Schleim knew the ripe moment when he saw it. He would crush this devil. He slithered himself up to his full height. He assumed the grandeur of dignity.
Your arguments, devil, drop into the rocks and fall like dust into the grass. The Tolmep admiral and the Tolmep captain and all the Tolmep ships and crews were never in any way acting outside the command of the Tolmep central government. So enough of this claptrap about pirates, and let us get on with the proper business of surrender.
The taste of triumph and victory was sweet as poison in the Tolmep's mouth. In a few moments now, this whole thing would be finished. Sir Robert groaned. He saw the two small gray men were looking down, nervous now, regretting, perhaps, they had helped.